Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin, increasing and reaching your child's full potential. Each week, our objective is to help you as a parent, guardian, or loved one direct the path of a young person by empowering you with knowledge and understanding. Each week, you will be enlightened and moved into a position of positive parental involvement and influence. I am Phyllis Austin, and I am the founder of the National Parent Education Center, where we educate parents on education, help parents create quality education for their child, and advocate with parents on educational issues. Okay, and thank you for joining Classroom DNA. I am Phyllis Austin, and just to let you know, I was listening to Walter Hawkins, What Is This, prior to coming on the show. Nice song. You know why I didn't realize it actually ties into our topic, What the Heck is Going On, What Is This, although his is a little bit more spiritual. Today's show is titled Bush Ama, ATS Cheating Part 2, Bush and Obama Roles. Okay, what is the DOE role in national widespread cheating? And you know, we're going to look at racketeering or entrapment, high stakes testing, and student progress limiting factors. So I invite you, if you haven't listened to the first part of the ATS cheating broadcast that I did last week, then I invite you to listen to that podcast. It's very informative. So let's get started with today's lesson. This show actually came about, I only intended to really do one show on the ATS cheating scandal, but when the sentence broke this week, and as we got further into the week and conversation developed, I realized another show needed to be done, especially when someone said, so you think it's entrapment? And I said, wow, that's going to prompt me to do another show. So if you're listening out there, feel free to call in. I'll call in number 347-855-8603. Again, 347-855-8603. We have to start, when we talk about the DOE's role in national widespread cheating, we have to first establish that there is widespread cheating nationally. So let's go ahead and reach that mark. Okay, there have been accounts of widespread cheating. I took this from an article. I actually read part of this article last week. There have been accounts of widespread cheating in dozens of cities, including Philadelphia, Toledo, El Paso, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Houston, and St. Louis. According to a 2013 report by the Government Accountability Office, that's GAO. I remember living in D.C. and being in the office. 40 states detected instances of cheating by educators in the previous 2 years. Now, let's examine that statement. 40 states. So, the Atlanta ATS cheating scandal was based on 2009 CRCT results, Criterion Reference Test. Okay, 2009. Now, that was under Bush. Okay, so that happened under Bush. Now, 2013, and you're talking about Obama. In the previous 2 years, that's 2011 to 2012 school year and 2012 to 2013 school year. Okay, or it could very easily have been 2010 to 2011 and 2011 to 2012. But more than likely, it was 2011. And 2012 school years, those two school years. And that was under Obama administration. And it's very important to realize that at the beginning or right before the 2011 school year, I believe, I'm quite sure, I'm 99% sure, that was when Obama issued the waivers. And the reason why I'm quite sure is that was also the year that we had four parents come to us trying to make sure their children's educational needs would be met. When I say us, I mean the National Parent Education Center. And we explained to them that we can get you out of a school, but because Obama waived the part of school choice for adequate yearly progress in Georgia, we can't guarantee that we would get you into the right school that meets your child's educational needs. And just to let you know, all four of them end up, well, all three of them, three of the four students end up where their parents had to pay this backdoor tax, basically rent property in these school zone areas. So you have two administrations in which we know the cheating occurred. Two, not one, both administrations, the Bush administration and the Obama administration. So you got to ask, what type of policies, or do they get it, that tying money, federal funds, to a standard, a test for students to reach a certain standard to get the money, not just saying where the students are, but they have to meet a certain standard, a certain mark, creates a problem. Now, in this article, Jennifer Jennings, a sociologist, noted that even in Texas, whose reform model inspired No Child Left Behind, scholars doubted whether students had progressed as rapidly as the data suggested. Administrators exempted low-performing students from taking the test and underreported dropouts. So what that is telling you, that there's cheating going on, there's widespread cheating. Last week, I gave you the definition of cheating, several definitions, and one included deceptive practices. The APS scandal, their deceptive practices, which is actually some of the teachers, what they were found guilty of was erasure marks, but the sentence also racketeering. So now I want to read what John Ewing stated, because I want you to really get an understanding of the roles the DOE play. First of all, under two administrations, you have widespread national cheating. Okay, deceptive practices being used to show that you have this student progress going on. Now, John Ewing, who served as the executive director of the American Mathematical Society for 15 years, this person who's writing the article, told me, but that's for the person writing the article, that he is perplexed by educators' infatuation with data. Their faith that is more authoritative than using their own judgment. He explains the problem in terms of Campbell's Law. Campbell's Law. So this is a law, and it is a principle that describes the risk of using a single indicator to measure complex social phenomena. The greater the value placed on a quantitative measure, like test scores, the more likely it is that the people using it and the process it measures will be corrupted. Okay? He warned that policymakers were using mathematics to intimidate, to preempt debate about the goals of education and measures of success. So, do we have national widespread testing? Yes. Do we know? Is the data out there to support that when you do this, you intimidate and you cause corruption? Yes. So the question becomes, if you know this, all these big people in the DOE, you're under the Bush and Obama administration, you're passing these policies, is that entrapment? When you know that what you're doing could cause corruption. You're listening to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin. We'll come back and talk about entrapment. Please feel free to call us. Our calling number is 347-855-8603. Again, that's 347-855-8603. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Bush and Obama. I call them Bushama. Okay? Because we need to conjoin the two. We don't need to be separate. Both of their policies are wrong. Of their policy of tying money to standards, when all the data shows we have widespread cheating and it will cause corruption. So let's go to a commercial break and we'll be right back.
Hello, this is Phyllis Austin, founder, of the National Parent Education Center. When I first started this organization, I wanted to make sure that parents understood what a quality education is and what it looks like. Do you know that most state constitutions only provide for an adequate education? Here at the National Parent Education Center, we help parents create and receive a quality education for their child. Please support our efforts by making a $5 donation. You may donate more, but please donate. Visit TNPEC.org and donate now. Thank you.
Okay, and welcome back to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin. Phyllis Austin, we are talking about Bush-Ama. I called it Bush-Ama because when you mention one president over the other, you know, you tend to get this, what they call it in journalism, this talking point. I forget the specific term, but people say you made a statement about this president and not that one. So I want to make sure that you understand this problem of national widespread cheating has continued across two administrations. Bush-Ama, okay, those are the two. Okay, but I want to let you know they are conjoined. I don't want anybody to put out there what she said one without mentioning the other. Okay, so now we come to this question of entrapment, and I want to read the legal definition of entrapment. I'm not a lawyer, so I always invite lawyers to come in and make a comment, and I'm not going to play that I am a lawyer. I'm not going to give you, say what it is. I'm just going to raise the question. Entrapment is a defense to criminal charges when it is established that the agent or official originator, originated the idea of the crime and induced the accused to engage in it. If the crime was prompted by a private person who has no corruption to the government, it is not entrapment. A person, and then they talk about example, in criminal law, the act of law enforcement officers or government agents, DOE, they give them money, to induce or encourage a person to commit a crime when the potential criminal expresses a desire not to go ahead. The key to entrapment is whether the idea for the commission or encouragement of the criminal act originated with the police or government agents instead of with the criminal. And basically what I read on entrapment, that's just a brief summary of what I read. But basically what I found out, if the person didn't have the potential, would this person have committed the crime in the first place? Do they have the potential to commit these types of criminal activities? And you got to realize that most of the people who were convicted were first-time offenders, okay? So the question becomes, is this entrapment? Now, there was another argument that came up this week before we go on to discussing high-stake testing. People said, well, should they go to jail? Okay, they should receive some punishment. And I think what people forget, I'm not going to question whether they should go to jail or not. You guys can debate that all day long. I want to look at... go beyond the surface and look at what's really causing or continue what causes things to take place and what continues the deceptive practice. But don't forget that these teachers, their license were revoked in the state of Georgia. And it's not like when you have a driver's license revoked, you can go to another state and get your driver's license. More than likely, they are out of the field of education for good. So when we talk about entrapment, let's go back to this national widespread cheating and entrapment. The money on the table, did it cause people to do things that they would not have normally done? Okay? Now, as a layman's person reading this, I'm just going to say I think there's what I read and what I presented to you said that we need to look at this. A legal person will present the entire argument. Let's talk about high-stakes testing. I want to transition to high-stakes testing Because another part of the argument came up with the APS cheating scandal and the role of the DOE and this high-stakes testing. I was listening to NPR. I was listening to NPR radio, and they had someone on from New York saying, well, you know, you got to have high-stakes testing to know how the children are positioned. And I was like, where did they get that person from? Where did they get that person from? Let me just remind the audience that you're listening to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin, and we're talking about DOE's role, the Department of Education under the Bushama administrations, and their role in this cheating scandal or national widespread cheating. Okay? So the question becomes, I ask, where did they get that person from who makes that statement? Because first of all, they're using the wrong test. Okay? You have this money coming down from the federal government, and they tell you have to give these tests, and the kids have to show progress, but you're using the wrong test. This is not a test for positioning, telling you how kids are positioned to their counterparts in other states. This is a criterion reference test. Norm reference tests tell you where how children are positioned and how children are positioned. Those are norm reference tests. These are criterion reference tests. And within some of these states, these criterion reference tests are not national. Georgia gets to make their own criterion reference test. Illinois gets to make their own criterion reference test. Michigan makes their own criterion reference test. Whoever takes the money, they're going to make their own criterion reference test. Here's the key now. These states may say, we have a norm reference test component. Yes, but that's not national. That's within your state if there's a norm reference test component to your state test. So you're only comparing within your state's population, the counterparts across various districts. So you have two problems here. First, it's not high-stakes testing. It's stupid testing. Okay? If you want high-stakes testing, you have to have a universal national test being given at the same time. Okay? The same test at the same time so you can compare and you can rank kids as far as what percentile they score in which they score. We had a test like that. It wasn't forced down the throat through the DOE, but there is a test like that. It's called the OWA test of basic skills or the Stanford 9, okay? That's what those tests exist. But we don't use those tests. Let me just read to you about the Georgia milestone test. We have moved away from criterion reference test to Georgia criterion reference test. And now this year, students will be taking the Georgia milestone test. Okay? Listen to this. The Georgia milestones measures how well students have learned the knowledge and skills outlined in the state adopted content standards. It's not national, that's state. Students will take the assessment on days specified by their local school system within designated state testing windows. It's not even on the same day. Georgia milestones measure how well a student has acquired the knowledge and skills outlined in the standards for his or her grade level. Students are not compared to each other. They're not compared to each other. But they are measured instead of how well they are meeting the standards. So it's not even a positioning test because you're not comparing it to a child in another school district. Okay? And when you have this money tied to testing, not only do you have the states creating their own tests, you have different grading scales across the country. Okay? When you have a child working, having or eliciting a certain amount of effort over here, it may yield a B. Over here, it may be a C. Over here, it may be an F. Over here, it may be a D. Well, over there, it can't be a D because that school district doesn't even have Ds. And then they sit down to take a test, and there's no correlation. Okay? You're listening to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin. We're talking about the APS cheating scandal is part two, but Bushama, Bush and Obama roles in the APS. That one just, not really, just not, we're not going to limit it to APS cheating scandal. That's not actually the show. Their roles in national widespread cheating, cheating that's occurred across the country. We're going to go to a commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Phyllis Austin. You know, parenting is very difficult. I don't know too many parents who can raise a child to 18 years of age without getting stuck, not knowing what to do. So I would like you to visit householddna.com and view the Household DNA Parenting Pyramid. Learn about the 7 principles of parenting, 4 of which you should be actively doing every day. Next, visit phyllisaustin.com and click on the Power Bookstore for great parent resources. You can pick up my latest book, God Has Not Forgotten You, written for teenagers and college students. While there, get your copy of my ever-popular book, From Parent to Power, Don't Parent in Fear. Visit phyllisaustin.com today for your book and parent resources. Thank you.
Okay, and welcome back to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin. Yeah, I'm just really enjoying myself educating parents. And, I mean, doing this Saturday, every Saturday morning is wonderful, okay? It's just a wonderful chance to really educate parents and what they really need to pay attention to. We're in our third segment, and we're talking about student progress, the class ceiling. I mentioned this before. My brother and I was having a conversation, and I said, when a child is born, I said, let's really look at what the educational system can and can't do. When a child is born, the statistics that are, that can't be created, doesn't mean that it's going to be true, but the statistics are based on the family in which the child is born. Okay? So, they look at certain factors, where the child's going to grow up, the education of the parents, which is probably going to tell you if the child's going to grow, where they're going to grow up and everything, and you have these statistics being generated. Da, 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 da. Okay? Now, they don't look at, they don't wait till the child enters school to give you the statistics. It's based on when the child is born. Mom, dad, what's your education? Is there a father involved in the child's life? All of that comes before the age of 3 when the child can, depending on where they attend school, go to a public school. What does that tell you? That tells you that there are limiting factors placed on a student's progress. Now, let's talk about what limiting factors are. Limiting factors limit things. In other words, if you, in your DNA, if you had 2 tall parents, yeah, you probably more than likely come out, well, we're not going to talk about, let's look at something that's not as multi-allele. Okay, ignore that comment. Okay, let's scratch that altogether. But a limiting factor limits things from happening. That's what it does. Let's say you're on an island and you, island of Aruba, and you wonder why they don't, the whole island is not being used because one side of the island is, it doesn't have the conditions for people to populate or live there. If you talk about the growth, the population of the United States or the population of the world, we have 7 billion. We only expect it to get to 10 or 11 billion because we believe there'd be limiting factors, okay? Space. Resources in your house. Why don't you have 100 people living in your home? Because space would be a limiting factor. Okay? Now you get right. Space would be a limiting factor. How come the population decreased in the number of kids that they have? Because women used to have 5 kids at once, 6 kids, and then they went to 5, and now they're at 2.5. Well, it's a limiting factor. And a limiting factor in population tends to be the education of women. As women get highly educated, they don't tend to want to have all those children.
Okay? So these are limiting factors. Well, what are the limiting factors in a child's progress? Well, here they are. The family. You can send a child to school. Let's say you're going to send a child to school on a test date, and every educator will tell you, make sure that child gets some sleep. Why? Because if the child doesn't get any sleep and the child is tired, that would be a limiting factor on how well the child does. So you're not going to have this growth, this constant growth in student progress. Every educator knows this. However, maybe the DOE forgot this. I don't know who's making these decisions at the top of tying money to constant student progress, because there are limiting factors that occur. And then you have a sustainability. It's no guarantee that the child who showed progress in 2011 will show progress in 2012. So let's look at these limiting factors that educators on the ground level know about. Well, one, nutrition. And we know this because we have school breakfast and lunch programs. When children weren't being fed, children don't learn. That is a limiting factor. Okay? Let's go to number two, another possible limiting factor. Parents who mistreat children. That's emotional stability of a child. When you have children, and now you're talking about 60 or 70% of children in that range, it fluctuates, but in that range, living with grandparents, it can take emotional toll not having a parent around. You're talking about drugs, and you're also talking about the economy. When parents are stressed, concerned about jobs, then guess what? Sometimes the children internalize that things change and the family is stressed on the child. So that's why you're not going to have a constant exponential J curve from a mathematician, but let's say constant growth. I want to keep it to people in the audience, the average person who doesn't, you know, people who have problems with math, this constant growth curve, okay, just going off the charts, because they are limiting factors involved. That means you're going to reach what I call the glass ceiling in student progress. Not to say that we can't exceed or break the glass ceiling, but you will reach the glass ceiling if you only focus on the schools to make student or to enhance student progress. You will reach a glass ceiling, okay? Because it has been proven and determined that there are limiting factors within the family setting that hinder and impede student progress, okay? And we know this from the basic message of administrators saying, go home and get a good night's sleep and have a great breakfast. Why? Because if a child doesn't get a good night's sleep or have a great breakfast, they will have limiting factors. They will be limited on what they demonstrate on a test that is supposed to be about, supposed to tell how well they progress. Okay? And I remember hearing one of the presidents, I'm not going to say which one because then you're going to break it up and get this little statement, but let's look at Bush Obama. One of the presidents said, well, you don't have the pizza for breakfast. No. You can't do that. We're going to do all we can, but no pizza for breakfast for the parents. Why? Because improper nourishment is a limiting factor on how much students learn or what they will learn and how much they will demonstrate on a test. I remember taking the ACT in high school, and I used to work for Ponderosa in North Riverside Park. And that Friday night I worked, I think we closed up about 12, went home, got up, took the bus way out to Limbo, took the ACT, and got a 13. And my counselor said, well, you need to go to a state school. I said, I'm not going to a state school. But I said, do you feel you're going to ACT at 13? I said, I was sleepy. And she was like, statistics show that you're not going to make that much gain. I said, I'll take it again. The next time I took it, I scored in the 20s. Why? Because sleep deprivation is a limiting factor. I didn't work the next time. Nice, oh gosh, it was like, oh, I feel really good. Got on the bus early, went out to Limbloom and scored in the 20s, okay? Why? We have to understand limiting factors. So when you, as the United States Department of Education, Bushama, over two administrations, decide to create a system that rewards meeting certain standards, showing certain student progress without considering limiting factors that are independent of the school, then you are a problem. You're causing, you're contributing to the problem of widespread cheating, especially when states are strapped for money, when there are more IEPs and 504s and more family issues. If you want to break the glass ceiling, do the responsible thing. And I can tell you, there are only four things that the DOE needs to do. That's another show. But do the responsible thing and let's refocus our efforts, okay? You're listening to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin. And we have really been, I believe I did. I love when the archive shows come out because it really tells me how many people are listening to the shows and really enjoying it, and I enjoy the feedback as you send me emails and let me know. But just very quickly, this is for another show. The DOE only needs to do about four things, in my opinion. I'm going to give them, and then I'll explain them in another show first. Regulate equal and monitor equal access to educational opportunities, which meets the child's educational needs. That's one. You know, they don't do a good job at that, okay? Two, make sure the child doesn't regress. When we have children that are scoring way above the mark on norm reference tests, those ITBS tests, 2 and 3 years above what the school is performing, or their peers in that grade level, they should be moved, okay? Give some money for vocational ed. That's right. If you're going to give money for vocational education programs at the secondary level. And, of course, make sure 504s and IEPs are being implemented. Do that. That's enough for you guys to do. If you decide to dabble in something else, do it. Make sure you embody and the full commitment to what is required, not just money for showing a certain or reaching a certain standard, but make sure that you have a universal grading scale. Make sure you have a national grading scale, and make sure you have a national test for these states who want to receive money. Okay? We are going to start our online national classroom, and I am so excited about this. We're going to talk more about that in the next show. Ashley is we're going to be off next week. I'm going to have to go to professional development training. To get my training on, okay? But our national online classroom, it's national for parents across the country, our national online classroom where we can educate parents on everything that would help your child to recognize quality education, to create quality education, to make sure your child's getting a quality education. And we want to roll that out in June, but we are starting our fundraising campaign this week. If you are on Facebook or emails, you will be receiving our fundraising information. You need to donate because free is not sustainable. Okay? Free is not sustainable. Okay? It's only so much, so many people we can reach, and in order to make an impact on quality of education and what parents need to know, we have to have certain tools and we have to have the vehicles to educate a lot of parents nationally. Whew. You have been listening to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin. Keep those emails coming, those letters, and just telling me, you know, you appreciate what we do. I can't do it without you, and it's not going to happen without you. so when you receive Facebook posts and Instagrams and everything, forward them on. Okay, forward them. Sometimes people don't like to hear from us, but they will hear from you when you tell them, hey, it's a worthwhile cause. You be the vehicle, the man in the mirror to make this happen. I enjoy being with you. As always, we're going to end with you are a winner. And if you have any questions, comments, or you need help, please feel free to contact me at the National Parent Education Center, paustin@tnpec.org or info@tnpec.org. Thank you and have a great Saturday. And until next time, have a great week.